أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم. This report comprises of a series of parts that describe our journey from Najaf to Karbala. This report is dedicated to Sayyidul Shuhada Imam Hussain alayhi salam, whose sacrifice continues to light a fire in the hearts of Mumineen worldwide. It is also dedicated to two wonderful people we met along our journey and we became great friends with them. Their names are Amar, Dr. Amar, and Engineer Ayad, also called Abu Maryam. These two people exposed to us a side of Iraqi hospitality that we would not have encountered had we gone alone on this journey. In the last part of this report, you will also get a chance to know how you could contribute to the arrangements that are being made for these Zawar of Imam Hussain every year, how you can contribute to it either financially or by actually going there and serving these Zawar. I would also describe a number of mechanisms through which you can, inshallah, join us in the walk next year. If you have any questions, you're welcome to contact me at lessonsfromkarbala@gmail.com. I'll also provide that email towards the end of the report. I had heard stories about this particular walk called Mashai in Arabic. I heard stories about millions upon millions walking, congregating into one of the largest gatherings of human beings on earth, totaling around 15 to 20 million people. I had heard that there are tens of thousands of people who are serving these millions along the way. But I could not have imagined, and nothing would have prepared me for what I experienced during these 3 or 4 days that it took us to go from Najaf to Karbala. These reports will contain stories, short stories about how we went through this process, what we heard. It contains stories of people's descriptions of the time of Saddam. We spent a lot of time in interacting with the local Iraqi people that we met. And inshallah, through this report, we will try to share some. I'll try to share some of these experiences with you. So our journey started in Bahrain. I had flown alone to Bahrain, and I was hoping that I would find somebody to join during the walk. So by the grace of Allah, even before flying to Najaf, right at Bahrain, I met a couple of friends that I had gone to Hajj with last year, and they were also planning to walk. Two out of the three had already walked in the past. One of them had walked at Arba'een and the other one had walked just at Ashura. So Alhamdulillah, I was able to find some really good friends, and again, the journey would not have been the same without them. So there were three of these friends from Canada that I met during my flight from Bahrain to Najaf. And then we landed in Bahrain, in Najaf from Bahrain. Around the afternoon, and we went to the Imam Ali's shrine to pay our respects there, and then we started our walk. Even when we were starting the walk, at least on my side, I did not understand the experiences I was going to have in the next few days. But you know, I could sense that this was something extraordinary, just in terms of when we started the walk. Although it was already dark, I could see men, women, children walking alongside of us, basically chanting, you know, reciting latmiyas and saying Labbaik Ya Hussein, and walking straight. We started walking and it was quite cold. It started becoming cold. It was about -3 or -4. We walked from about 8 o'clock or so to about 12. And then we stayed at something called the Maqib. So you will see in the pictures there are maqibs, and one of the most fascinating things I found out was that I timed that there weren't even 30 seconds of walking that we could do without coming across one of these maqibs. So basically, for the 80 kilometers that we walked from Najaf to Karbala, there was a maqib after the maqib after the maqib. They were basically adjacent to each other. And these maqibs typically had tea, they had food, they had place to stay, they had washrooms. And all of these maqibs were put up by people from around Iraq and from around the world. We found maqibs from Bahrain, from Africa, from Pakistan, from other parts of the world. And they were all private arrangements. We didn't, for these 3 days, we didn't pay a single penny to anyone for food, for drinking, for staying, for using any other facilities, and we did not encounter any government arrangements in that sense of for the people. I mean, there were government arrangements in terms of security and helicopters hovering around and things like those, but not in terms of the staying. So again, during the first day, we were quite tired of our travels, and it was night as well, so we didn't grasp the scene in detail. But during even the first day, we started encountering some of the hospitality when people stopped us and offered us food and offered us a place to sleep and offered us some really delicious tea. And they were very, very kind and very insistent that we use the facilities that they had. In fact, they were literally begging us to please use the facilities and have give them a chance to serve us, as they said that we were the zawar of the imam. Especially once they found out that we have come from far away, they became even more hospitable if that was possible. We stayed at a Husseinia or an Imam Bargah, and in the night, I saw the arrangement that the Husseinia had prepared basically beds, small mattresses on the floor, and they had blankets. And we were very tired, so we started sleeping. We started our sleep there. At about 3 o'clock in the night, I woke up because there was somebody doing their Salat Ishab. And because of that, of the commotion, I woke up a little bit, and then I was feeling a little bit cold because the temperature had dropped to about -5. And there was this Iraqi person who did not speak any English, and he came up to me and he said he wanted me to move to a spot within that Imam Bargah that was much warmer, had better blanket and a better bed. And I told him that I couldn't do that, of course, it was his spot. And we were having this argument in whispers, and it was such a touching moment for me that for 20 minutes, there was this person who kept on insisting in Arabic that I take his bed and I take his blanket and I take his pillow, and that he would sleep in my place, and that I should really allow him the opportunity to take his spot. And of course, we couldn't do it. Anyways, we reached a compromise where I had to take some of his things, and I didn't take all the things that he was offering to me. But just the love that he was trying to express in Arabic, and he was trying to tell me that I am his brother because I love Imam Hussein, and he tried to say, just like we recite in Ziyarat Ashura, Inni Salman Liman Salimikum wa Harban Liman Haribikum. So he was trying to say that I am his brother because I am here for Imam Hussein and he is here for Imam Hussein. And it would be a great honor for him if I took his blanket and his pillow, and I took his bed. And just the love of Imam Hussein that he had was unbelievable. And I at that point thought that this was, a really nice person. What I didn't realize was that this would be the experience we will be getting throughout. When we got up in the morning, we ran, we started talking to each other, and there was a couple of other people that joined us, and that's where we met two of these really wonderful individuals. One of them was Ammar, who's a dentist. So Dr. Ammar was excellent. He had really good English, and he spoke Arabic very well as well. And we started talking, and then his friend, who was an agricultural engineer called Ayad, also called Abu Maryam, also joined us, and we had breakfast together. And then both of these individuals decided to join us, and we are so glad that they did, because it would not have been probably possible for us to complete the journey, especially in the manner that we did, without their help. Throughout this whole journey, they hardly let us touch our stuff. They carried, one of my friends was carrying a bag with the camps, with the tents and everything, and these two individuals bore the brunt of carrying our luggage. And despite our trying hard, they did not let us carry this thing. And they were, alhamdulillah, much more physically fit than we were in terms of their capability to walk really fast, to stop, to run, go ahead, to find out stuff, and be back at where we were walking. So the next morning, we started our journey after a few hours of talking to them, and that is where I started to feel the atmosphere. The atmosphere was unbelievable. It was filled with people from all walks of life, belonging to all parts of the economic spectrum, from everywhere in Iraq, from Diwaniya, from Nasiriyah, from Basra. Just as I was having pain in my leg for after walking 20, 30 kilometers, I was watching 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds, you can see them in the pictures, walking steadily. We could see old women carrying people, carrying a baby on her back and carrying blankets and carrying other stuff and walking. And when we started to talk to some of these people, some of them had been walking for the last 12 days. They had come from Basra and they had walked for 600, 500 plus kilometers already to reach Najaf, and they were going forward. And they also related stories to us about how during the time of Saddam, he did not allow anybody to walk, and anybody found walking during Arba'in would be executed on the spot. And so these people had to go behind the trees, go from the desert, swim in the rivers. But some of them that we met still did that walk, and although they could not reach the shrine, they did managed to go from Najaf to Karbala through these side roads, and at the great cost of their lives sometimes, or the lives of their friends and family members. They did continue this tradition, and as soon as Saddam was gone, 4 million people marched the first Arba'in that Saddam was gone, and their slogan was that Saddam, you are gone and we are still here, and Imam Hussein is still here. And if we have to, we will crawl to the shrine of Imam Hussein. We started walking, and we also saw these really interesting models throughout the Mokibs. They had these three-dimensional models, and many of these people had this tradition in their families since the time of Imam Hussein. So we met people who have been doing the walk or who have been putting a Mokib of some sort for the last 42 generations. So, alhamdulillah, they have kind of kept their tradition alive, and despite the brutal crackdown that I'll tell you more stories about, they continued to have they continued to commemorate, and Saddam Hussein could not take out the love of Imam Hussein from their heart. One of the other fascinating things we found was, just as we were walking, because we were speaking in English to each other, a lot of people realized that we were coming from a different, faraway place. So again, for example, we just had lunch and we were walking ahead, and there are these three guys who first requested us really hard that we come and have lunch with them, and we tried to explain to them we just had lunch, and then they literally dragged us, and they were, mashallah, quite fit, and we didn't want to upset them too much. And again, it was done out of love, but they practically picked me up and put me into the chair and made me eat lunch one more time with them. And one of the other fascinating things I found was, as soon as you stop on it and sit on a chair or go on a sofa, anybody who stops, there are people who come in and they take off your shoes, they start massaging your feet, they start massaging your legs. They are basically offering any sort of help. I asked somebody if I could, when I was resting in the afternoon, if I could have a blanket, and he said, if you ask me for my eyes, I will take them out for you. It was an Arabic expression, of course. And then I met an Iraqi soldier, and I talked to him, and he said, I would cut my head and put it in your feet. Again, using an Arabic idiom for saying that, and he said, you can sit on my head because you are a Zayir of my Imam. We also met an old woman, and she said, I want to kiss the ground where your Zawar walk, because you have come here to pay your respects to Imam Hussein. We saw old women who were doing Ya Hussein and doing Matam for hours. We saw young men who were running towards the Karbala in a fascinating manner. We saw again, as I said, younger kids that were going there. The love of Imam Hussein that these people had was so amazing, and the stories that they told about how Saddam tried to crack down on them. So, for example, we heard stories of how Saddam Hussein, with the help of the United States of America, and their full support, kidnapped and had Shia women raped, and the children that were born out of those rapes were then recruited to be Saddam's Fedayeen's army. We also got a chance to talk to them about politics and about all the things. So I asked them about their impression of the United States of America and how they view the Americans. And it was fascinating because some of the secular intelligentsia and the elitist in North America would have us believe that the Iraqis need to be very grateful now that the Saddam Hussein is removed. But every single Iraqi that I talk to, and I talk to a lot of them throughout this journey, express an instant hatred or dislike of America, and they said they can't wait for Americans to get out. And when I asked them the reason, and I tried to play the devil's advocate, and I said, "Aren't you grateful that they have removed Saddam Hussein?" They tried to explain to me that they completely understand that Saddam Hussein was an agent and puppet, in their words, of the United States, and they were very well informed about the fact that the United States gave him not only a $5 billion credit officially for buying weapons, but also, provided him the Bechtel, for example, provided him the chemical know-how to build a chemical plant that was later used against the Shias, killing hundreds of thousands of Shias. When I tried to argue more in a different setting, saying, "Well, but whatever you say, aren't you happy that Saddam is gone?" One of them gave me an example of saying that if he sends a dog to my house and the dog kills my family, and then he comes later and kills the dog, would I be grateful to him or not? And he was trying to, what he was trying to indicate was that the Iraqi people completely understand that when it was in the United States' interest, they kept Saddam Hussein in power, and when it didn't suit their purposes, they kicked him out. And it is not out of the love of Iraqi people. It is, of course, for their own gains, and they hold the Americans responsible for all the deaths that they hold Saddam Hussein responsible for, and many after that as well.